So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 106. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about the Solo, A Star Wars Story, red carpet, and all the news coming out of that. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
I know, I'm back for a second week in a row.
Wow. 2 weeks, wow. Anyway.
I know.
We also have Caitlin joining us this week. Hey, Caitlin.
I'm back.
I know, you're back too. If you want to get involved in the conversation, guys, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio with over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including Last Shot. And I will be honest with you, I had actually purchased the book. I wasn't doing the audiobook for it. But then I was talking to Evan last week after the show, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to sign up for Audible. And he got the Last Shot audiobook. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it too. So I ended up downloading the Last Shot audiobook, and I will say it is an awesome version of an audiobook. There's some that, like, I think better than the book, like the Thrawn one. This one is really good. Not only is the story good for Last Shot, but, like, the way it's produced is really good. So check it out. We've also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include our Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, and After Dark episodes. If it's okay if you can't support us via Patreon. We also have merchandise available on our website at resistanceradio.net. We got t-shirts and button packs, and you can see some people wearing those at Solo, because we gave away some about 6 episodes ago. Guys, we have a lot of news, because Solo has been seen by public people now.
Yeah. So yeah. Reactions are out there. I will say, be very, very, very careful if you are seeking out reactions. I have seen a couple of quite high-profile people in the Star Wars fandom give out a warning that some people who have seen the film have not been as careful with their spoilers as they should have
been.
That
is true. Oh. And we will be very careful, so don't worry, we will not be spoiling anything. We will just talk about the reactions and news.
Yeah, I have not seen any of those, but these are people that I know from other Star Wars podcasts who also have been, like, I've met them at Star Wars Celebration. I get along very, very well with them. They are not people who would say that lightly. So just be very, very careful if you are, like, going on Twitter, like, yourself and searching the hashtags and all of that. Just be very, very careful, because apparently there are major spoilers and discussions out there somewhere. I would say also err on the side of caution if you're on Reddit as well. That tends to be a place that has a lot of spoilers. So if you want to go in spoiler-free, and you were looking for the early reactions to Solo, just be careful. And may the Force be with you.
or you can just listen to us and we won't spoil it until after the movie's out.
There's also that. I would imagine that they're already listening to us if they're hearing this message.
I know, right? But I'm just saying, you can just do that. Like, close off and just listen to us, and we'll give you all the news that's not spoiler. And you go see it on 25th, and then we release the show on Sunday. And you hear about it. Anyway.
You realize that we have this episode, one more episode, and then we'll have seen the Solo movie.
I know. We're one episode away. I'm kind of excited. Yep. So, the first bit of news actually comes from the red carpet. So, Jon Favreau was obviously at Solo, the red carpet premiere, because he plays a character named Rio, an alien. But he actually got to talk to Nerdist Senior Editor about his series that was announced a while ago. So Jon Favreau is doing a television series, and he's going to be doing... the series he's doing is going to take place 7 years after the Battle of Endor. So it's going to be between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens. So probably placed around the same time as Star Wars Resistance. But it's going to be live action, and it's going to use a lot of the technology that he did in Jungle Book. So I am beyond excited about this, because now we know when his stories are going to be taking place, his live action series. What do you guys think about this?
It's an understandable time frame to set it in, because there is quite a significant amount of time to play in there. And they do also have a lot of stuff that's been coming out in terms of comics, in terms of novels, in terms of, like, just other additional supplemental sort of, I guess, material that has been coming out that has been fleshing out that time period between the Battle of Endor and The Force Awakens. So it's, while there's a lot of freedom to play around in that time frame, there's also a lot of touchstones for events and occurrences that have gone on in that time since the Battle of Endor. So it's really, really interesting to see what they'll do with it, what they'll set it around, what will go on, how it'll tie into all of this other stuff that we do know if you have been following the novels, the comic books, if you've checked out like other things in and around that time period. So it'll be interesting to see that visually brought to life, because obviously up until this point it's all been like book related pretty much, whether that's comic books or novels.
Yeah, I will say this, the EU, most of the EU took place in this period of time after the Battle of Endor. Books that took place literally directly after the Battle of Endor to, you know, 40 years after the Battle of Endor. So a lot, actually almost all of the EU took place in this time frame, and we're slowly starting to get some novels in this period. We had an Aftermath series. We've had Last Shot. I'm trying to think of what other books have come out. We had Before the Awakening, which is right before. But all the other books I'm thinking of have been before, like during the original trilogy. Or I guess Phasma was just before it also, because it kind of leads up to the history of Phasma. But for the most part, most of those books kind of have left this time frame between kind of empty. And we got a little bit of the of Luke's experience when we had the Legends of Luke Skywalker, but not much. I will say this, I am really excited about this because the series he's making, the live-action TV series, is going to feature all new characters. So it's not going to be any of the characters we're used to. It's going to be all new characters, so it's going to tell a completely unique story. What type of film what type of series it's going to be, I have no clue. So I'm excited for Resistance coming out, because we're going to be able to see that kind of Resistance tie in with Leia and Poe Dameron and everyone. And then we're going to have this live action one that could be a completely separate adventure. I will be honest with you, I will really hope that if it ties into some maybe bounty hunters, some of the CD underworld, you know, of like Coruscant or some of the places we know in Star Wars. I think it'd be really cool if it did something like that. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Do we know what the timeline is for this?
It was just announced.
Yeah, so not really. The only thing we know is the time period it's being set in. Obviously, yeah. Because it's a live action show, considering it's this time of year as well, I feel like the story that they're going to be telling is going to be entirely dependent on...
It's expected Favreau's live action show is going to launch on Disney's upcoming streaming service.
Yeah.
And so it's expected to launch in fall of 2019.
Yeah. Okay, so in that case, it's a lot more likely that they'll be able to plan similarly to how they planned for Rebels. So I would very much expect in this case that they have a set idea of how many seasons or how many episodes they want this to be, what their start point is and what their end point is, and then they'll just tell the story over like a finite amount of time between those two points. You know, that kind of platform for a show like this is a lot easier for them to work with, seeing as they own the entire scope of it. So they own not only the story they're telling, the like production company that's putting it on, they also own the platform that it's going to be airing on. So for them, there's very little in the way of instability. So they don't have to do these big, shocking moments to keep like an audience coming back the way that network TV does. So while I don't think we have that idea of like the time frame in terms of like how long we should expect it to be airing for, I feel like that's something that they'll very likely have considered, because they have the scope to tell a full story on their own terms in their own way. Unlike something airing on a cable or like any kind of network channel where, you know, they don't know from season to season whether or not they're going to be renewed. All of the cards are in Disney's hands in this instance. So while we don't have that information, I don't believe, I would imagine that we will get it at some point, because they have that scope and ability to do it.
No, I was just asking because I wasn't sure how long we had to wait for this, because at least with Resistance, we knew it's coming out in the fall. And, like, I know that there's, like, essentially a 20 to 30 year difference between this time frame and the one for Resistance, but it'd be kind of cool if, like, because they could make it work, like, in further seasons where, like, there's characters in this show that are mentioned or make cameos in Resistance.
And I'm sure that will be the case, because I'm sure we'll end up seeing some overlap, because it is all one universe. Unlike the MCU, which the movies are their own thing, and TV shows have kind of split off and did their own thing also. They may mention what happens to the movies, but there's not much from the TV shows going to the movies. I will say this, one thing to be mindful of is, this series is meant to launch around the same time as the Disney streaming series. I think this is going to be a driver for people to purchase that service. Yeah. When you think about it, because most people now have either nothing, they have just cable, or they have Netflix or Hulu. And I would wonder if they're going to follow the Hulu model or the Netflix model when releasing a unique their own show. For those who don't know, Hulu releases, like television, one episode a week of their shows. So, a good example right now, Handmaid's Tale, very popular. My wife is watching it. It's released one episode a week, just like traditional television. Whereas Netflix, one of the great things about Netflix is you can binge watch, and sure enough, once a new series is released or a new season is released of a series you watch, it's all released at once and you can binge watch it. I would love to get that information earlier than later, just to kind of decide how they plan to release this. Is it going to be something that's going to be released once a week, and then obviously you can go back and rewatch all of them once it's all released? Or is it going to be, okay, guess what? Part of this new network is this series, and guess what? You can watch all 15 episodes or 24 episodes or 12 episodes or whatever they decide to do.
I don't know which model is. So here's like a really weird difference between, I think, how Netflix operates in the UK versus how potentially it also operates in the US. So a lot of licenses for TV shows, because we don't have multiple streaming services over here, we mostly have Amazon Prime and Netflix. There aren't any other competitor streaming services available here from like different platforms. So those are our two options. So what you will find is that on Netflix, over here, particularly, you have a very even divide between their original shows, which tend to drop all in one go. So you can binge watch. It plays massively into that binge watch culture. But other shows, like, for example, The Good Place, they air week to week. Black Lightning's another one. There are a couple of shows that we get through Netflix that air once a week, every week. So yeah, I guess it'll depend. Yeah, I guess it'll depend. Because
they own the network. They also own the production they're releasing. Are they going to follow Hulu's?
Yeah.
Or are they going to follow like Netflix? And you have to remember, the reason I brought that up was Hulu's original series is still released once a week. Not like when you talk about Black Lightning or Good Place, which those are done by a studio and then being released on a streaming service because they are showing once a week. Hulu actually makes the Handmaid's Tale, and that's instead of being released like Netflix, they release it once a week, just like a more traditional television.
But that also, like, looking at the popularity of these shows, you get a very similar amount of buzz. I think that with the... While... I guess it depends on how the show works, how the narrative is set out. Do they want to draw out that information for a little longer, or do they just want it all to go in one huge block? Because I think what I see from doing, like, entertainment journalism is that shows that drop on Netflix all in one go, one giant drop, you get a very largely concentrated buzz about that show, and then it kind of just fizzles out, except for, you know, the sites that very specifically focus on that and just, like, keep digging into it over and over and over again, which in the case of Star Wars would mean Star Wars specific sites would probably keep, like, watching and rewatching it and looking at it. Whereas with a weekly one, you know, you draw out that conversation for longer, which I think possibly in the advent of it being a brand new streaming service, if it's going to drop at the same time, potentially having it weekly might keep both the streaming service and the show in the conversation for longer.
So I think that's what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, it has more potential to reach a wider audience if people are talking about it for a, like, in the public sphere for a longer amount of time. I mean, that's my gut feeling about the way that they might go, because with Netflix, their huge binge-watch dump of all of the episodes at one time, they're already an established streaming service. You know, they already had people who subscribed. They were already a known name and brand of streaming service. So doing something like that, they've already got a partially inbuilt audience, so it's not as big a risk. If they want to, like, use it as a jumping off point to also advertise that the service is there, weekly is probably going to be the better option. And they can obviously adjust that in the future once they've got an audience base. They can change it as they want to. They own the entire platform. But I don't know. Gut feeling makes me think that they'll go weekly to start with.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was thinking weekly just to keep people subscribed, because I'll be honest with you, I'd want to subscribe to watch the very first episode and stay subscribed for the entire release of the season, even if it takes 26 weeks, if there's a 26-episode long season or something like that. But, moving on, next bit of news. So Solo, A Star Wars Story, sequels seem really likely. So again, coming from the red carpet, critics who have seen it without doing any spoilers, apparently, the story sets it up very, very easy for them to continue on to have a sequel. And we do know that Han Solo himself, Alden Ehrenreich, has signed on for a three movie deal, with obviously options whether a second or third movie happen. But it definitely sounds like it's the story's going to lead us to where it makes sense to have another visit with our favorite rogue. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, it's not surprising. They always said it was optioned for a potential trilogy, right? So mm-hmm. They didn't say that there was going to be a trilogy, but rather that it had been optioned for the potential to be done as a trilogy. So it was written into the contracts of some of the
actors.
Of the actors, particularly Alden Ehrenreich and Donald Glover as well. They had sort of clauses within their contracts to say that it could be a trilogy. Obviously dependent on how audiences accept Solo and how it does at the box office. Obviously, if it's not a financially viable option for them to turn it into a trilogy, which at this point it's Star Wars, it was always a foregone conclusion, regardless of how people feel about it. It's always got that built-in audience that are always going to go. It had the option to go to a trilogy. So the idea that it set up a sequel is not that surprising. not at all, because it makes a lot of sense considering that they had that option already built in. So if they didn't have something that could be a jumping off point for a sequel, that would have been more shocking to me.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that, you know, since we knew about that for a while. But just to read two tweets from someone named Mike Ryan, I'm not going to go into anything that would spoil us. Oh, and this is for sure how the Solo is now the Solo franchise. It's not really hiding the fact that it's setting up more Han Solo films. He does also respond to questions about how people thought of Alden as Han. I will say, this is something I said probably months ago, but he says, it does take a bit to get used to Alden as Han, but after 30 minutes or so, your brain just adjusts. And honestly, I feel like that's what it's going to be. It's just watching the first trailer, I was like, it didn't sound like the Han Solo I grew up knowing, but I'm sure being immersed in the theater, eating popcorn, watching the film, you'll just eventually like, oh, okay, it's Han, and just kind of accept it. So I'm excited to see this film, and it definitely sounds like we'll get more Han Solo after this movie.
Yeah, which, you know, will be quite... It'll be interesting to see... It's not what staying power it has, but, like, can they tell a story that still works within the time frame that they want it to? Like, how close to bumping up against A New Hope will they get? And will it overlap at all? Will be the interesting part. And then, how do they deal with, or what do they do in terms of, I guess, dealing with if there is that overlap? I guess hiring other actors to play some of the other characters that we would expect to see in that. It depends, because I don't know exactly how long before A New Hope this is set. I don't think I've seen anyone specifically reference the time frame yet.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it about 4 episodes ago. It's 9 years before.
Okay,
or
there
10
we go,
years
then.
Before. 10 years before.
Okay, so they've got a little bit of time to play with. Yeah, that'll be interesting, because that's actually...
Yeah.
While it sounds like a long amount of time, it doesn't... It's not. If you think about how far along the movies tend to, like, jump between each movie, 10 years is not actually that long an amount of time within the scope of the Star Wars universe. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's 10 years before, and the easiest way to find that out was in the trailer. They talked about Chewie being 190. We knew at the time of A New Hope he is 200 years old, so that's that 10 years. Right. It also gives time for the Falcon to age and go from pristine white leather, you know, Nerf hide leather, to that kind of beige tinned patina look that we know that Han had with it. Even if it's still clean, or maybe it's dirty, who knows? I will say, this next article I want to talk about, I just want to talk about it real quick because it really doesn't go into it too much, but it takes everything we've talked about so far and a few of the other things that we're going to talk about during the red carpet and kind of breaks it down, is the journey that Solo has taken so far. You know, when we first heard about Solo film, I don't think anyone, like, I was kind of excited about, oh, that's cool, I'll have a Han Solo film, but, like, you instantly have a fear of, like, who's going to play Han Solo. Because it wasn't going to be Harrison Ford if it was going to be a young Han Solo film, since it was announced right after we saw Han Solo die in The Force Awakens. And then, of course, we were like, well, if they're going to have a young Han Solo film, we need to have Lando. And I was all for Donald Glover, and I'm glad that Donald Glover's there. But then we also had two directors take on this, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I always get those back mixed up. But we had them take it, and then they were fired, and you start to get worried about it. It did have, like, I will say, this production, just like Rogue One, had a lot of turbulence, if you will. But at this point, after seeing the responses from the red carpet and everything, do you guys still have any bad feelings about Solo? I know, Donna, you were like, I don't know. What are you thinking about this?
I'm still skeptical. I mean, it's a... Everything that I've seen so far in terms of, like, the clips and trailers, there are glimpses of things that catch my attention, and I am actually interested in seeing explored, but equally there are things that I'm still a little bit on the fence with, which, you know, is fine, because that gives the film scope to prove me wrong. And far be it for me to be like, yeah, okay, I'm concerned about the film, yes, been concerned about production, yes, I'm a little concerned about how they're going to treat some of the characters, and particularly a lot of my concern comes from the potential relationship between Kira and Han, and how that's actually going to affect the story in terms of what we know about Han and Leia's relationship, and their life together moving forward, and what we know about Han from the canon supplemental material, like the books and the novels and Sanistaros and all of that. So, like, that's one of my issues. The other one is the character trajectory. I don't know how they're going to make this work without giving Han a very, like, you know, you expect that kind of arc of, like, not the hero's journey necessarily, but you expect a character to grow in certain ways and change and develop and adapt over the course of a movie. But Han is supposed to be deeply unlikable. Like, he's not a nice guy when we meet him in A New Hope. So I don't know how sustainable that is as your main character, because it's sort of anti-hero-esque, but it also plays into a very specific trope of a male action hero character that has, over the years, become old and tired. So those are where my concerns still lie, is that for a lot of people, they're probably going to love and play into that, but for some other people, that may still be a concern. And until I feel like we get more people seeing it, it'll be hard, or even see it ourselves, it'll be hard to judge, because a lot of what we're seeing right now is like a reaction within the scope of the tweet. So yes, I still have my same concerns, willing to be proven wrong, but yes, I do still have some concerns about the Solo movie that are very specifically linked within a narrative structure that I'm not a fan of, particularly, and also how certain relationships will then affect the movies that have already come before it, i.e. the original trilogy, i.e. Han and Leia's relationship.
Caitlin, any thoughts? Are you getting excited, or are you still on the fence?
I think, like, as the article kind of explains, like, I was kind of more on the side of the fence of, I don't want this. But some of the clips that I have seen have made me actually look forward. I'm not going to say excited, but look forward to seeing it. And if anything, most of those clips involve Lando, not Han.
I'll agree with you on that. Like, the clips of Lando have instantly made me feel like, oh, this movie's going to be awesome because of Donald Glover as Lando. But I don't think you can tell Lando's story without including Han in it anyway.
Yeah.
And Han is I'll be honest with you, Han is a bigger character than Lando in Star Wars. He is more popular, even though I will say I love Lando, specifically capes, and living amongst the clouds in Cloud City is one of my favorite things. But I definitely think Han has to be there, and I think this movie is going to introduce us to all of that. And I think it's going to be just a fun adventure, and I'm excited about it. But moving on. We have...
I was just going to add, like, we know less about Lando than Han, so it actually does leave more room, like, what he did before he met Han, and also, like, in terms of, like, because Han goes off and does his own thing eventually. And we know that there's, like, this kind of distance between them at some point, in which case they could turn around and tell a story of Lando. And who knows, maybe that trilogy will center around that if they do make more movies.
We'll have to wait and see. Now, we have confirmation of another standalone film. We don't know what it was. It used to be officially Boba Fett with Josh Trank on it, but he dropped out, and the assumption was it wasn't going to be a Boba Fett movie anymore. There has been rumors persistent that it's going to be the Obi-Wan movie with Ewan McGregor, and an anonymous source spoke to Fanthatrax on Thursday, right as the red carpet was going to be there, that the art department is now full production mode at Pinewood Studios in England, as well as a concept artist all about Kenobi. And of course, Ewan McGregor was there on the red carpet at Solo, but he didn't have a beard. What do you guys think? Are we actually going to get that Kenobi movie, or is it going to be something different that we just don't know yet?
I wouldn't be shocked. A little while back, though I didn't really report on it, I did some research because some production codes for Pinewood Studios were put in place that actually referenced like a working title and was registered with Lucasfilm for the Obi-Wan movie. So it sounded like they were doing some setup, if not like really early sort of stuff at the studio, potentially screen tests and checking out and setting up like things there to do like initial kind of testing and production, but they also were like booking out the stages. So that came, must be like a good year or so ago. And the starting point for when all of that was like set up for is coming up and lines up with this article. So it's entirely plausible and possible and likely that this is going to be for the Obi-Wan movie. In terms of Ewan McGregor actually being at the premiere, I don't know why anyone is surprised at that. He's still, like, even outside of this potential Obi-Wan Solo movie, he's still a Star Wars fan, and he's still part of the Star Wars universe in terms of, like, he was an actor in those movies, you know, he still loves the Star Wars universe. Of course he'd want to go to the premiere if he was free. Like, I don't get why it's, like, that surprising that he would show up, whether there was, like, a project on with Lucasfilm or not. But in this instance, you know, I think we're almost certainly getting an Obi-Wan movie at this point. Everything is pointing to yes.
Well, because, and even if the one that, like, this one that they keep referring to isn't the Obi-Wan, I think there's been so much interest and demand for it that they, even if this isn't the one that is supposed to be the Obi-Wan, they're like, maybe we should make one because so many people want it.
Yeah, I think we'll get a Kenobi movie eventually. My only concern is I know Simon Kinberg is still currently working on the script for a Star Wars movie. He's been attached, but he was also attached to write the Boba Fett movie that Josh Trank was attached to, which he has since been dropped or removed from. So we don't quite know. You know, we do know that there's another standalone film coming out. We'll just have to wait and see if it is Obi-Wan. I feel like it's really interesting because they announced it, and then they have announced the David Benioff and D.B. Weiss series. They announced the Rian Johnson trilogy, and they announced this solo, the standalone film. I keep wanting to say solo film, but it's not. So, you know, a Star Wars story film. I just find it weird they haven't announced what it is. I guess they may want to make sure that it doesn't like take away from Solo or anything that has been announced. I don't know. It just feels weird. But it was nice to see, you know,
and
Ewan McGregor at the premiere. We didn't really see anyone else from the prequel show up.
I feel like the other people from the prequels have a more complicated relationship still with Lucasfilm. So I would understand more why they tend to keep a distance because of, like, the divided Ben, like, reaction to the prequels. It's so divided.
Yeah, but someone like Natalie Portman, who has gone on to continue to do well, Liam Neeson, and stuff like that. Like, you'd expect, if Ewan McGregor got an invite, you'd think, like, maybe they would show up too, but they didn't.
I don't doubt that they probably were told, like, if you would like to, you are more than welcome to come along. But I feel like Ewan McGregor, even with all of the insane criticism of the prequels, like, and we've criticized the prequels. There's a lot about it to criticize. I hope we try to be fair when we do, in terms of, like, you know, there are still redeeming qualities about them, but there's such a, like, it's so reviled. Like, the prequels tend to be written off by a lot of fans. And even amongst all of that, the one thing that people tend to agree on is Ewan McGregor was one of the best parts of the prequel trilogy. Like, everyone has, like, a huge respect and a love for his portrayal of Obi-Wan. That's why there's such huge demand for him to play Obi-Wan again in a Solo movie.
I guess it's also that he's also been a lifelong Star Wars fan, considering his uncle played Wedge Antilles in the original series. So,
I would say that Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen, like, they have a far more complex relationship with what the prequels did initially to their careers just coming out of it, and also, like, the continued fan reaction after that point. So I'm not saying that they don't love Star Wars. I just feel like, of the people to want to keep a professional distance, maybe, or even, like, not feel entirely ready to maybe come back into the fold with it, despite potentially still being huge fans of the franchise, I know Natalie Portman does still really love Star Wars individually. But I understand why Ewan McGregor, of all people, would still go to a premiere where other people involved in the prequels might choose not to go.
And just going back to why they haven't revealed what the third standalone project is, if you think about Rogue One and Solo, they all had, like, not that it's, like, a bad thing, but they all had, like, reshoots or issues leading up to their release. So maybe this time around they are being extra cautious and making sure that they have everything aligned and everything will, as much as possible, they can predict, will go smoothly before they announce what it is.
Or they can also be doing the idea of maybe make the Kenobi movie like the Solo film, a trilogy, and we'll get three films of Ewan McGregor. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see, but I do find it interesting that he was there, maybe not, but like I said, it is one of those things where we didn't see many of the other prequel actors there, so we'll have to wait and see. Moving on, Battlefront 2 has announced an all-new Season 2, which is the Han Solo season. I will say, I've been kind of lukewarm on Battlefront 2. It's kind of fun to play. Not really, you know, I think it's the whole drama around the release of it. I do think it's nice that they've gotten rid of the gambling packs from the get-go. They no longer offer those at all. I am excited for some of the new skins that they're offering for the characters. Lando's going to have the Skiff Guard skin, and Leia's going to be dressed as her Bounty Hunter outfit that we see in Return of the Jedi. And we have this new... I know, right? And we're going to have this really awesome Tatooine landscape to fight in, specifically like the Rancor Pit, Jabba's Palace, and it just looks absolutely wonderful. So we'll have to wait and see how that comes out, but it is coming out soon as the Han Solo season to tie into the Solo movie. What do you guys think of the artwork there?
Looks good.
I love the artwork. I think it looks great. I mean, there's one thing that people can all generally agree on with Battlefront, the Battlefront games, is that they're beautiful. They're absolutely gorgeous games. They're so, so well done, so picturesque. It's so great just to, like, look at them. I am also very glad that they've got rid of, like, the gambling packs and boxes. Like, bye-bye, you will not be missed, etc., etc. Like, it's one of my most hated aspects of games other than time trials. You know, when they, like, do a timed event in a game where you have, like, just, like, a certain amount of time to complete, like, a puzzle or a task. I hate those. Don't put that kind of pressure on me. I have that enough in my real life. But, yeah, I'm just really glad they got rid of that. I love the look of this. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's good. You know, we'll wait and see how the gameplay is. I know JodoCast would probably go over it. I play with it, you know, every so often on my PS4. But moving on, last bit of news before we get into the solo red carpet, we have SNL cast member, or former SNL cast member, Bobby Mohanahan. Mohanahan? I can't say his last name. I'm bad
at it. I'm pretty sure it's Monahan, right?
Monahan. Bobby Monahan. He did play Kylo Ren in one of the SNL skits a long time ago, back in the when Force Awakens came out. But Bobby Monahan is lending his voice to Star Wars Resistance. He's a lifelong Star Wars fan, and guess what? He gets to be in Star Wars now. What do you guys think about that?
Yes. Yes. Such a good choice to bring him on to the Star Wars show and everything as well. It's just, I'm just so, so, so excited.
How do I word what I'm trying to say? It's always nice, like, Star Wars, now it's so popular to be a fan of Star Wars, and that's fine. But I always like to see when people are genuine fans of just things in general, and then get to participate in it in some capacity. So, like, on, like, an extra, like, another level, I'm just excited that another fan gets to participate in the production of something they're a fan of.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on this. The fact that he got to meet George Lucas once and kind of geek out about it. Like, I remember the first time I got to see George Lucas in person. Like, it was like, even if you, regardless of your opinions to George Lucas, like, I know I'm the one who said, oh, I'd love to see him come back to direct or guest direct or shoot a scene in one of the, you know, films. Just for the sake of, like, the homage, even though he's not part of Lucasfilm anymore, but it has his namesake. It is one of those things where you have to give him credit where he created all this. And just him being excited about it. Like, it's not to take away from anyone who's a new fan who got into it with, like, The Force Awakens, but it is nice to see someone who has been a lifelong fan and get to kind of go participate in it. Like, even me doing this Star Wars podcast, this is something I love doing every week, get to talk about Star Wars. It gets that, you know, so I'm not this, like, person who's pent up and want to just talk all about, you know, Star Wars when I get the one chance once a month or once every couple of months or something like that. I get to talk about it every week, and I love it. So I'm excited for this. I love it when fans get to enjoy their work and get to be part of something. So I'm excited to see Resistance. Again, I think the anime style, I've started to watch a couple more animes again just to get back into that, and I'm really excited to see where this goes. So, guys, I think it's time for talk about the solo red carpet treatment. So, I don't want to go through the whole thing because it's an hour and like 40 minutes long, and we can talk about it. And there's a bunch of advertisements and, you know, all the solo trailers that we've seen so far have been released in there. And there's a bunch of Twitter polls. And if you want to know about the Twitter polls, you can just go to Twitter and look at, you know, user Star Wars, and you can see all the polls there and you can see the winners. But I do want to talk about some key things real quick. So the red carpet premiere, the world premiere, was at the Dolby Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. Now, the Dolby Theater is, I would say, probably a block away for the Grauman's Chinese, where the original Star Wars movie premiered at. So it's right there in the thick of Hollywood, if you will. And guess what? The Millennium Falcon was built, a life-size Falcon was built right there on Hollywood Boulevard, right in front of the Dolby Theater. So They showed us in the red carpet, from the red carpet, they showed us a time-lapse video of the Falcon being built. What do you guys think of, one, the building of the Falcon, two, the Falcon sitting there and being surrounded by just like the rest of Hollywood Boulevard?
I thought it looked really cool. Like, I absolutely love that. Also, like, gives an idea, like, to an extent, what it might be like to see the new Disney park with the Millennium Falcon in, and what it might be like to see people, like, walking around and underneath it and around it, or even just ships in general. Like, so that was really interesting to see it in a situation where there was quite a lot of people around. Like, how the scope and the scale of that actually works, because when you see it on the screen, obviously a lot of that is like a set piece. Like, you don't actually get to like see it interacting in real life with a large amount of people. So this was really interesting to get like an idea on that scale, but also it just looked really cool. Like, how cool did it look to see the Millennium Falcon as if it had touched down here in Hollywood? Oh,
that was like absolutely awesome. Like, seeing a life-size Falcon just, like, on the ground with people walking around it, like you said, like, that is... That was awesome.
Did anybody help? I didn't get to see the whole thing. I just saw clips. And, conveniently, one of the clips I saw was when they were interviewing Aldrin... I can't pronounce his name right now. But they're interviewing and they're like, you know, you parked the Falcon in like a no parking space, right?
Yeah, it's like a towing zone. Like,
and he's like, you what? I didn't even notice it was there, because he was so busy, like, I guess, interacting with fans and signing things that he didn't even notice that the Millennium Falcon was right there. But he also got to interact with it, assumedly, a lot while he was filming the Solo movie, so it probably doesn't jar, or maybe it still does jar him when he's there, as opposed to like the rest of us that's not a normal view that we get.
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, you know, this is just, you know, one of Alden's many cars. You know, he's got his own car that he drives, and he's got the Falcon. You know, it's like the bumper sticker, my other car is the Falcon. I think it's one of those things where just seeing it on Hollywood was awesome. And I think for him, you're right, like, he's used to seeing it like in the background of set and stuff like that, even though it's probably been about 6 months since they wrapped shooting, or actually been 4 months since they wrapped shooting. So he probably hasn't interacted with it as often, but we know the Falcon plays such a critical role in the film. So I'm sure they spent a lot of time in the set that was the Falcon, or around a life-size Falcon, that they're able to shoot with. So I just thought it was awesome to see a life-size Falcon in front of the theater in Hollywood Boulevard with fans around it, taking pictures of it. It was absolutely amazing. Like, I think it was one of my favorite things to see in the whole thing. Not just and it was at the beginning, but just to have that as your backdrop for all the interviews and everything that was going on in the red carpet coverage. I just think that was just... It was probably the highlight of it, I will say. At least for me. It's just having that life-size Falcon there. Past that, we also had a backdrop that was shot multiple times as people walked through past the red carpet and pictures. One of the backdrops was a stylized version of the Falcon cockpit, but it was made out of Solo cups. I thought this was really clever. It was painted Solo cups, silver and black Solo cups. They had lots of cutaways of people kind of like taking pictures in front of it and everything. What do you guys think of this? You know, like, I kind of expect, like, you know, movie theaters or you know, grocery stores. Like, now it's summertime, you know. Make sure, don't forget your Solo cups for your Star Wars picnic, your barbecue outside, and use these cups that are designed like the Millennium Falcon's, you know, cockpit. What do you guys think of that?
I thought it was really clever. I mean, obviously we know that the working title was like Solo cup, so it's really cool that they've run with that going into the premiere. So I thought it was really clever that they did that. It looked really cool. And also, it takes like a second to realize what it is.
Oh yeah. I paused it, went back and looked at it. And you actually see even like the Solo cup, like indentation, like where you have your hand, the grip on it. I don't know if there are silver and black Solo cups, like if Solo brand company made cups for them, because the insides of the cups are all still white and the, yeah, you know, the rim is, or if they were painted.
I would imagine, like, it's too, like, the, it's Lucasfilm and Disney. If you think that they didn't make them custom Solo cups just specifically for the premiere, it's,
oh, I'm sure they would have, and I know they have these colors. Like, you can go to, like, any of the party stores, and they have all the different color Solo cups and stuff. So I know that they didn't make, you know, I'm sure they made them for them, yeah, with the colors they wanted, but I don't know. Maybe it's just like a last minute thing and someone did a prop of it and they painted
it. Definitely do not. Maybe, I definitely don't think this was a last minute thing.
A little bit of a budget saver after they built a life-size Millennium Falcon.
They decided to use Solo cup instead.
Arts and crafts.
Yeah, we've already built the life-size Falcon. We can't really afford to build the cockpit. I know. Let's build it out of Solo cups.
There we go. That's good. Yeah, Solo cups. We'll do it. Okay. All right. Sorry, I'm looking at a couple things. Next thing that was really that really stood out was the Nissan. So Nissan has partnered up with Lucasfilm and Star Wars for a couple different unique cars, specifically the Nissan Rogue, which is an SUV. We had this during Rogue One. They did one for The Last Jedi. But this time, the Nissan Rogue, they did with some of the new features that they're kind of highlighting it, the lane assist and stuff like that. They really, really outdid themselves, I think, to model it after not a Stormtrooper, not after a Jedi lightsaber and something like that, but actually as the Millennium Falcon cockpit. What do you guys think of the Nissan Rogue Falcon car?
It was so cool. I added this into the doc as a highlight as I was watching it because I was like, yeah, okay, it's blatant advertising for one of the sponsors because they were sponsoring the red carpet. So it was like, it was a blatant advertising move, but it was so cool. Like, it's like a mini driving Millennium Falcon. It's incredible what they did to make it look like the Millennium Falcon. Not, they didn't just do like the outside up to look like a Millennium Falcon. They actually went inside and they paid like attention to detail with like some of the buttons and lights and other bits. And like, even when they were flicking some of the buttons, they made it so that it made some of the same sounds as their actual, yeah, so it sounded like the actual Millennium Falcon from like what they showed in the trailer. So that very specific click sound that you got in the trailer, that like they used as like a jumping off point, like they actually made sure that they replicated that specific click. And that's an insane, like, amount of attention to detail to get that to look like the Millennium Falcon and feel like the Millennium Falcon, but in car format. I was really impressed, you know, for something that's a blatant advertising move. I kind of liked it.
I'm not gonna lie, yeah, when I first saw the front of it, because it's that, like, dingy, tarnished, like, white-gray with the blue stripe, and because they want the front windshield to look like the cockpit for the Millennium Falcon, because it's, like, that dome shape, I first was like, it kind of reminds me of R2-D2.
I get that, yeah. And I will say this, I love the attention detail, not only the inside of it, but also the back of it. The back having the kind of the blue Falcon, yeah, kind of light up, the engines there that are there,
yeah,
right underneath the backup lights and the blinker and everything. The gun turret on the top. I will say the rims are probably what really impressed me the most. The rims look like the sides of the Millennium Falcon. You know, when you look at the Falcon, it has those kind of circles on the outside, like on the edges, I guess on the outside of the circle part, those are exactly what the rims of the car look like, and it is just absolutely, I think, awesome. Nissan does have a video on their YouTube channel. I'll make sure I link to it in the show notes about it, but they talk about how they, we saw this during the red carpet premiere, like how they talked about building it and everything, but it is absolutely awesome, I think, just the way they put it together and just the way it looks overall, especially the cockpit part, because the cockpit of it with all those lights and switches and everything, even though it's not really functional as a car per se, having some of those things, I think it's just be so cool to be in there and be like, all right, your gear shifter is like the light speed knob, and just be like, let's go to drive, and then you get to go. Like, it would be so much fun to have. But
I mean, I would also be very concerned about its actual roadworthiness and how legal it would be to actually drive on the roads. I don't know what, like, the rules are specifically with you guys over there, but that entire windshield area, and yeah, particularly the back, like, that would not be, like, that would not fly over here, like, although, to pardon the pun, like, that would not happen. You would not be able to drive that on any roads here. That would be super illegal.
I have to, like, agree with you, but at the same time, I'm looking at the front windshield, and, like, that's the exact same shape my wipers make when we have, like, a snowstorm. So, maybe in Canada, it would just be the same as driving through a snowstorm.
Possibly. I think it's because it blocks your peripheral vision.
Yeah, it does. Well, the back window itself is completely...
There's a lot of it that would be super illegal over here on the road.
Yeah, I think you can you would probably be able to drive it a little bit, but I think eventually you'd probably get stopped by a cop and they'd be like, no, you can't do this. You
need also, I feel like the gun on the top might like might raise some eyebrows.
But at the same time, if they put in a normal windshield and took out like
the gun
and the back, like re-exposed the back window, there's nothing else really there that would stop you from driving it around town.
No. The rest of it, I believe, would probably be okay, as long as you can see the brake lights and everything like that. You know, it would be fine. But as it stands, you would not be able to drive that car on the road.
Now, I will say, open until June 3rd, Nissan is giving away a Star Wars-inspired Nissan. You can get there by going to NissanUSA/Solo, and you can enter the sweepstakes where you'll be able to customize your own Star Wars inspired vehicle, but they won't cover up the windshield because, you know, covering up the windshield will make it not something you can drive. And you can choose from different types of cars, but yes, you'd be able to go ahead and customize it so you can go ahead and get your own Star Wars inspired car. But again, that's going to be more contest style, but I do like they have a lot of different styles. I'm looking through it right now. They even have, like, you know, land speeder style, like you would see from the original, you know, Star Wars Luke's land speeder. They have TIE fighter. They have more of a, I think they have a couple ones they've reused before. I think the Phasma silver one is there, but then they also have a new blue R2-D2 Lando's Falcon paint job that you can add to it. But go ahead and enter, and if one of you guys win it, let us know. I would love to take a tour or a photo of it. Anyway, let's move on to our next big thing that happened in the red carpet. And I don't know if it was a big thing, but I think we talked about it before the show. Specifically, a fan had a Red Solo Cup, which again was the shooting title, Red Solo Cup. And I think that was really funny when we got the actual title, because we had Ron Howard say, look, it was called Red Solo Cup, and we're just going to call it Solo. So I think he had a fan had a Red Solo Cup signed by the cast. I think this would be one of the coolest, like, memorabilia pieces to have. What do you guys think?
I thought it was funny. I also added this as a thing to bring up because I thought it was really cute. I wanted to give a shout out to that fan because that was really a clever thing to want to get signed, and obviously very appropriate and apt considering both the working title and also because Solo. Like, I just thought when I spotted this guy like handing over his Solo cup to get signed, I was like, oh, I see what you did there. That's clever. I liked it. And it really tied into the idea of like the custom Solo cup cockpit background. That was used as well.
And I almost feel like the cups from the background, I don't know how, like, if they can take that apart when they're done with it, but then I feel like the cast should sign those, and they could be part of, like a fundraiser. Like, bid to win one of these cups, and...
Yeah, like a charity auction thing, like they do sometimes. That would be really cool. Like, tying into Force for Change or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this. I would be really sad if he puts this up somewhere and then mom cleans the bedroom or something like that and throws away the Solo cup because plastic goes...
Or,
as long as it goes in recycling, it wouldn't be too bad, but it'd be really sad to lose something like that. I feel like it needs to be in a case. Or, like, you know, kind of like how people keep baseballs and stuff like that, like in one of those plastic cases or something. So I feel like that would definitely have to...
Yeah, and I'm just like... See, what I pictured in my mind is not only that, but if... like it was out on display on a shelf and somebody and like they had a party with a bunch of red Solo cups and somebody accidentally picked up that cup to use it.
Could you imagine? Oh my god.
Yeah. That'd be really sad. But I would definitely, like I said, you need to put it in one of those plastic things that would cover it up so people don't use it, so someone, no one throws it away. But definitely check out the red carpet video on StarWars.com. It's about an hour and 40 minutes long. There's a lot of interviews with cast members, lots of shots of the fans and the red carpet, the Falcon that's on there. It's definitely worth a watch. There is a lot of filler because obviously, you know, it's people on a red carpet. You see every trailer they've released so far of Solo. At least that's in my mind. I think we saw every one of them. But yeah, it's definitely a fun watch.
Yeah, if you get frustrated at the non-answers that you sometimes get when people are interviewed, I would say maybe scrub through some of the interviews. Some of them had like some really interesting like little tidbits about how the film came together. I thought Ron Howard's one was quite engaging. I really liked like some of the sound designers spoke as well. And a couple of the people in charge of, like, the effects, you know, those guys gave some, like, really interesting insight to the behind the scenes of the film, because a lot of what they could talk about didn't necessarily, or wouldn't necessarily spoil any specific plot points of the movie, whereas a lot of, like, the actors specifically were very, very guarded and closed down in respect to, like, what information they were giving out. So if you tend to be one of those people that gets frustrated by that sort of thing, that, you know, saying words without saying anything, just err on the side of caution of some of the actors' interviews of it, like, included in it. But otherwise, it was actually fairly enjoyable. I watched the whole thing this morning, all 1 hour and 40-odd minutes of it. I sat through the whole thing. I will say as well though, who was the guy that they cut to that was on the social stage? I keep forgetting his name.
I don't know his name off the top of my head. I know who you're talking about, but I don't know.
Yeah, so the start of the red carpet, if you get secondhand embarrassment or you suffer from secondhand embarrassment, he, by the end of the red carpet, he was warming up and getting a little bit more into it and was a little bit more engaging and very clearly not as nervous. The first part of it, he was very clearly out of his depth and didn't know what he was doing and was very nervous. There were a couple of technical hiccups that played into that as well.
With the Twitter,
the Twitter polls weren't integrating and stuff like that. So if you do suffer from secondhand embarrassment, and it causes you slight anxiety at all, like, that's also something to be aware of. That was when they cut from Andy Gutierrez and everyone on, like, the main red carpet to, I think it was, like, they called it the Star Wars social stage. So when they cut between those ones, just be aware through, like, the first third, maybe, of the red carpet, there are, like, moments where the guy seems like he wants to cry a little bit because nothing seems to be going right.
And yeah, they definitely had a couple technical hiccups as they first started out.
Yeah.
I guess they didn't have a good feeling about it.
But it wasn't bad. I'm trying to find his name. I'm scanning through the beginning of it right now. Let's see. He's there. David Collins. David Collins, and I don't think, you know, I don't think he's awkward. I think he was just not prepared for technical glitches because he's been there for other ones.
That's what I was saying. It's mostly like through the first third, and then once everything settles and he's more comfortable, he gets, like, it's very clear that, like, a weight has lifted. He's more into it. He's far more engaging. It's just that first third. It's that everything that can go wrong is going wrong, like, situation where he was just having a bad day.
I'm sure it's also not just, like, the stuff going wrong, but I'm sure, like, the producer's, like, stretch it out, keep talking, like cause there's a lot of this, like,
he
awkward,
does not, like, have an easy, he does not have an easy job.
Yeah, so it's definitely a little, it's interesting to see, but I know that when I saw it, I kind of facepalmed a little bit myself. But regardless, it's a good watch. Check it out on StarWars.com. Yeah. And guess what? We are less than 2 weeks away from our solo episode. As always, thank you for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. And as always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.